horseweed shoved to his feet, watching Catchstraw run blindly through the crowd. He wiped the back of his bleeding mouth with his hand and reached down for his atlatl, but all of the darts in his crushed quiver had been broken.
No, grandson, that's enough. We'll deal with him later. Stay here. I need you to take care of Sun Chaser and guard Kestrel.
Kestrel!
Horseweed scanned the crowd.
Where's Kestrel? Where did she go? Grandmother!
I've problems of my own. I didn't she...
Sumac was bent over Sunchaser with the heels of her hands pressed against his bleeding right arm, as though she could force the blood back into his body. But red flowed over and around her old fingers in thick streams. The fight had opened the deep gash.
No! Stay!
Oh! Sumac!
Sunchaser struggled to rise.
Let me go. Let me go!
He managed to shove Sumac's hands away and to roll to his hands and knees, but he sprawled face first onto the ground.
Sun Chaser, stop this! Horseweed, help me get him into the lodge. He's going to kill himself!
Horseweed ran to help as Sun Chaser's fingers dug into the dirt, and he clawed his way forward, getting up on shaking hands and knees again. His white hair draped in a damp, glittering veil around his face.
Sunchaser, you're badly hurt. You can't...
Horseweed, listen. Go. Find her. He'll kill her. Hurry. He can't afford to trifle with her. I'll help you as much as I can from here. Hurry.
From here? I don't...
Sunchaser slumped back onto the ground.
Go!
Sumac knelt by Sunchaser.
Do as he said. Find Kestrel.
Oxbalm gripped Horseweed's hand hard.
But be careful, grandson. Lambkill is crazy. There's no telling what he'll do to you if he catches you.
He won't catch me.
Horseweed took one last look at Sunchaser's bloody face, then ran with all of his strength, weaving through the crowd.
Did anyone see when Lambkill took Kestrel? Who saw them? Somebody must have...
Balsam waved his hands from across the gathering.
Oh, I didn't see them, Horseweed, but I saw Tannin. He ran down the eastern trail.
Horseweed lifted a hand in thanks and sprinted away into the grass-scented darkness. Moonlight slanted through the branches and fell across the hillside in bars and streaks of smoky white. Every rock and bush shone like polished shell. He hadn't run even a few tens of paces before he saw the sprawled figure at the base of the slope. He slowed and approached cautiously, his gaze searching the shadows for hidden figures. Horseweed approached and warily knelt to get a closer look.
Tannin!
The man's throat gaped. Blood had puddled around his head. How had he lived so long? For one brief instant, Tannin's panicked eyes met Horseweed's stricken stare. Then he moved his right arm up and curled shaking fingers to point to the south.
Blessed Mother Ocean, if he would murder his own brother!
Horror possessed Horseweed. He hadn't felt this terrified since he'd been a boy, and awakened in the night to find his mother lying dead beside him. He rose on nerveless legs and looked out across the dappled grayness of the foothills, fearing that Kestrel might already be dead. He couldn't track Lambkill in the darkness. No one could. He would have to trust Tannin's last gesture. Horseweed's eyes followed Tannin's pointing finger to a small thicket of newly leafed-out berry vines across the meadow. Quickly, he pulled the darts from Tannin's quiver and shoved them into his own.
I'm coming, Kestrel.
Sunchaser lay beside the fire, wavering in and out of consciousness, weaker and more helpless than he'd ever been in his life. When he had looked into Catchstraw's crazed eyes and seen the eyes of the dire wolf staring back, he'd cried out in horror. And Lambkill... He'd been standing there behind Kestrel, looking just as she'd described him, old and gray and maddened with hate. Kestrel needed him, and he could barely gather the strength to breathe.
Oh, hurry. Dizzy Seal, find me some cords so I can tie off his wounds. If we don't stop this blood from pouring out of him...
Here, take my belt.
Sunchaser felt someone lift his right arm. The cord was jerked tight.
Oxbalm, give me your belt, too.
Sunchaser blacked out briefly, then heard the wind as it rushed through the forest like a flock of enraged thunder beings. It took all of his will to raise his eyelids enough to gaze upward. The golden glare of the flames blinded him to the sky.
Which way did Kakstraw go? Who saw him?
I did. He ran down the western trail and veered off into the trees near Harrier's camp.
Sunchaser struggled to think. How could he best help Kestrel and Horseweed and battle Catstraw at the same time? Would Catstraw change himself into Dire Wolf again? Yes. Yes, undoubtedly. In the body of Dire Wolf, he would be able to run all the way to the seacoast, even injured as severely as he was. If he could find a place where he could rest and lick his wounds, he would be a far more dangerous enemy when he returned to face Sunchaser the next time.
Wolf Dreamer, help me. Help me find the strength. You know what I must do. I have to call the animals. To call their power into myself.
What?
Sumac leaned close to his mouth.
What did you say, Sunchaser?
He could smell the fragrance of yucca soap in her hair and hear the fear in her voice, but he couldn't respond. He focused his soul.
Wolf Dreamer, will you help me? I beg you, help me. Help me to draw Kestrel into the dream.
He felt his soul rising out of his wounded body, up and up. The violence of the storm flowed into him with the potency of Brother Hurricane's wrath. Silently, he called the animals by their secret names, the names they knew themselves by, and he heard the stirring in the foothills as each lifted its head to listen. Sunchaser solemnly pleaded for their aid. Power flushed his soul as he sailed over the camp and flew away on the shoulders of the gale. The towering black trees seemed to breathe around Lammkill. They swayed back and forth in unison, watching him through the eyes of silver spots of moonlight. He could sense their malignant spirits reaching out for him, hoping to snag his soul and rip it from his body. Their touch slipped like wet tentacles over his skin. Where had this windstorm come from? He'd seen no clouds gathering.
What do you want? Stay back! Stay back or I'll kill her right now! Stay back!
The tentacles retreated into the darkness, but he could hear the hoarse whispers of the forest spirits echoing around him. He kept his left hand clamped over Kestrel's mouth and shoved her down the dim game trail ahead of him. The knife wound in her leg must have pained her badly, for she had begun leaning into him, forcing him to carry her weight. How strange to feel her young, slender body in his arms again. He moved his right hand down and ran it over the seashells on her dress, then groped for her full breasts. Rabid desire flushed his system. His penis hardened with the need of her. She felt it.
So, my wife, you thought you could escape me, didn't you? Didn't you?
He twined his right hand in her thick black hair and wrenched her neck agonizingly. She nodded weakly. Lammkill felt tears running warmly over the fingers of his left hand.
I told you I would find you. Didn't you believe me? You know what a great tracker I am. I found every heel print you left, every tiny fragment of your dress. I even found the place where you gave birth to my children.
Kestrel twisted to peer into his eyes.
Yes, wife. I know now that the twins were mine, not ice plants. My son told me. The first moment that I brought him to life, he called me father.
Horror shone in Kestrel's eyes.
You don't believe me, do you? Well, Tannin didn't either. I tried to show him, but he closed his eyes and ears to me. That's why I had to kill him. He thought I was crazy. I bet you do, too. Oh, just wait. Wait! And I'll show you our son. I've taken good care of him, unlike you. You tried to murder him. He would have stayed dead if not for me and my knowledge of such things.
He forced her down the brush-choked game trail.
Do you remember what I told you I was going to do to Iceplant? I said I was going to let him go so I could hunt him down and slit him open before your eyes. Well, I didn't have the chance with him. He forced my hand, forced me to kill him before I could play with him. But now I have you.
Lamkill continued shoving and prodding her down the winding trail.
Let me tell you what I'm going to do with you, Kestrel. First, I'm going to stretch you out on your back between two trees. Tie your hands to one tree and your feet to the other. Then, I'm going to use my knife to carefully slice open the skin of your belly. Imagine what the pain will be like. Finally, when I get ready, I'll reach inside you and pull out your stomach, liver, and intestines. But unharmed, Kestrel. I want them to keep functioning. And they will, you know, for a very long, long time. I'll leave your insides on the forest floor to dry in the cold and wind. Oh, it will take hands of time for you to die. Maybe even days. Or maybe it won't be days. You'll probably be eaten alive before any of those fools from the village come looking for you and put you out of your misery.
Lamkill searched the dark shadows of the forest. Spatters of moonglow shifted as the wind blew through the trees. But Lamkill had the eerie feeling that something else moved out there. Something huge, with eyes as black as midnight. His heart had begun to pound like a hunted animal's.
Shh!
Lamkill cocked his head.
What was that?
Did you hear it?
Kestrel didn't make a sound, as though she, too, were listening breathlessly for movement in the forest.
What's that sound? I can feel the vibration of feet striking the pine duff. Don't you feel it?
Lamkill squinted to catch sight of the beast, but the creature slipped through the dense trees with the deadly stealth of a giant cat. He saw nothing except the wavering branches of brush and trees. Fear began to sour in his belly. To diffuse his panic, he jerked Kestrel to a halt in the middle of the game trail and put his cheek against hers, the way he used to in the old days when she'd loved him.
Yes, think of it, my wife. The ravens will smell your blood and descend in huge black flocks to perch on your soft limbs and caw hungrily while they peck out your eyes. The foxes, wolves, and bears will come next. The animals will be frightened by your screams at first, but gradually, they'll get used to it.
He lightly kissed her temple.
Imagine it, Kestrel. Use your wonderful imagination. The one you used to paint with. How will it feel when the foxes pull your insides out of your body?
Kestrel twisted violently and wrenched her head free.
No! Help! Someone help me!
Lamkill pushed her to the ground.
Yes! Yes! Good! That's better! Sit up and lean back against that dead log behind you.
Kestrel did as he ordered.
Oh! So disappointed. I've been dreaming of how glorious it would be to build a tree perch and watch your death from high above, but it's out of the question now. With the first gray rays of dawn, the Otter Clan villagers will be able to track us. There's probably already some fool thrashing about searching for you. I can't risk waiting around to see justice done. No! You'd be denied that pleasure. But it will be enough to know that you, my wife, are dead. And that I still have my son. Yes, my son. Little Coyote will keep me company forever. Oh? Do you doubt that?
Kestrel sat rigid, watching him through wide, unblinking eyes.
Don't move, wife. Don't even breathe.
He lifted his knife.
Remember, the longer you can convince me to let you live, the more chance you have of being rescued. Oh, yes! Hope for that. It's very unlikely. No one can track at night, but be quiet. Live longer. Hope, Kestrel.
Hope all you want.
Lambkill? Tell me about my son, our son. What did you do to bring him to life?
Lambkill studied her through half-lidded eyes. Was she just making talk to delay him from performing his final duty? Or did she really care about little Coyote? The haunting sensation of being watched by invisible eyes intensified. Lambkill squinted at the smoke-colored trunks of trees, the stacks of deadfall, the clots of brush. Vague premonitions of danger taunted his soul. What creature could cloak itself so well with darkness that even his trained trader's eyes couldn't spot it? Something black, blacker than tar from the coastal pits, and as silent in its approach as death. The vibrations of the forest floor had stopped, but his discomfort didn't ease. Cautiously, he slipped his pack from his shoulders and unlaced the ties.
Now you will see, my wife. Yes! Finally, you will know the power of the husband you spurned.
He lifted little Coyote out and cradled him in his arms. The baby boy's tiny body had become browner and more shriveled than ever. It smelled of smoke and sacred sage, which Lambkill had stuffed into his pack to make a soft bed for the boy.
Blessed spirits!
Lambkill sat down cross-legged across from Kestrel and stood little Coyote up on his knee, facing his mother. The boy's mouth had pulled taut to form a puckered black hole. The green stones that Lambkill had placed in the empty eye sockets glittered.
Do you remember your mother, little Coyote?
Lambkill tilted his head to listen for the boy's voice.
It's all right, son. You don't have to fear her anymore.
Futile tears poured from Kestrel's eyes. She remembered the warmth of the baby boy's naked flesh against hers, the pain of giving him birth, the terror of that rainy day not so long ago, when lightning had flashed all around her. How shocking to see the gentle way that Lambkill held the dead infant. Despite the paralyzing fear that pumped bright in her veins, she could still wonder. She had never seen him display that much tenderness in their entire life together.
How? How did you do that?
I disemboweled him. Then I smoked him over an open fire for 7 nights in a row. After that, I called up his spirit, tied it to his body.
Why? Why would you do that? How, Lambkill? How could you do it to him? How could you condemn his young soul to living in a dead body?
Because I love my son. That's why. I wanted him to be with me forever.
He cradled the dead baby in his arms again and rocked him gently, as though trying to get the boy to go to sleep. The baby's puckered brown body moved in and out of the shadows. Kestrel's soul writhed at the sight. All around them, storm winds whipped the trees. Kestrel extended a hand.
Lambkill, let me help you bury little Coyote. We'll do it together. We'll bathe him and dress him in a new fox hide shirt. And then we'll sing his soul to the star people. He'll be happier there, where he will have a body of light.
I'll never bury him!
Brusquely, he slipped the dead boy back into his pack and laced up the ties.
Never! You hear me? Never! At least here, he has me to love him! You wouldn't understand that. You've never really loved anyone. You bitch! You bitch in heat!
Kestrel closed her hand on air, dazed. He'd hunted every trail for a 2-moon walk to find her, and she wondered now if he hadn't done it just to show her that he finally had someone who truly cared about him. Someone who would never make him angry or hurt him.
I loved you, Lambkill.
He rose and walked a short distance away to lay the pack atop a dead log. He patted the pack softly while he shook his head.
No. No, you never did. You just pretended.
I didn't pretend. No one could pretend the kind of feeling I had for you.
He rubbed his eyes. When he turned, his quartz crystal necklace sparkled. His head was bowed. Stringy gray hair framed his face.
Do you hear it? You hear it now, don't you?
The forest seemed to dim suddenly, as though a thick curtain of black clouds had been drawn across the face of Above Old Man.
You said earlier that you brought him back to life. Does that mean that you've actually been able to hear him speak? Has he talked to you?
Oh, yes. Yes, he speaks to me almost every night, guiding me, helping me to find you. I didn't just chance upon OtterClan village wife. Our son led me here.
What else has he told you? Does he...
Lamkill turned and stared down their back trail. Kestrel rose on trembling legs. It had been cycles since she'd heard that sound, but her body remembered it better than her soul did, and a wave of new fear blinded her. On the trail, a huge black shape blotted out the moonlight. It had its blunt muzzle to the ground, sniffing out their tracks. Taller in front than in the rear, the short-faced bear had a chest as broad as Kestrel's height. Its eyes glinted in the darkness, and it bared its long white teeth. Lamkill had his back turned to her. Kestrel leaped on Lamkill and grabbed the back of his mammoth hide necklace. She spun around and yanked him off his feet and onto the ground. He tried to scream, but nothing came out as he flailed. Lamkill gripped her skirt and tugged furiously while he battled to flip over. Kestrel tightened her grip on the thick braid and staggered forward up the trail. Her wounded leg wanted to buckle. Behind her, she heard the short-faced bear closing. Lamkill released her skirt suddenly and kicked out with all his strength. The force sent Kestrel toppling forward, but she kept his necklace thong pulled tight over her shoulder. Her forearms ached, her hands were going numb. She heard the sound of hide clothing ripping while Bear tore at the struggling Lamkill. Lamkill tried to fight back, but gradually his body went limp. Kestrel was too terrified to let go of the necklace. She scrambled onto her knees and threw all of her weight into keeping the cord tight where it puckered the skin of Lamkill's neck. A strange light shone in Bear's eyes. He tilted his head in an almost tender gesture, as if silently asking if she was all right. Bear blinked and held her gaze for a long moment. Then slowly, he backed away and trotted into the trees, with his square muzzle up, scenting the wind as though hunting.
Horsweed! I'm over here!
She saw him loping down the trail, his head moving cautiously as he scanned the shadows. He had a knocked atlatl lifted in his right hand. He broke into a run when he saw her.
Kestrel!
Horsweed knelt beside her, and his young eyes narrowed as he appraised Lamkill. Gently, he reached out and put a hand over Kestrel's aching fists, still knotted in the necklace thong.
You can let go now, Kestrel. He's dead. Let go, Kestrel. Easy now, please.
No, he might... He might still be alive. I can't let go. Not yet. Just a little bit longer. I have to... Hold on just a little bit longer. For Cloud Girl's sake, she'll never be safe if he lives.
Horsweed nodded sympathetically and lowered his eyes to examine the wounds in Lamkill's legs, where Bear had clawed deep gashes. Blood still ran in dark streams, soaking the pine duff.
Bear did a good job, almost as though he knew. He sliced through the big arteries. Your husband would have bled to death even if you hadn't strangled him, Kestrel.
He turned back and gazed at her in a kindly way. His hand lay warmly on her skin as he patted her aching fingers.
Please, let go now, Kestrel. He's dead. I promise you, he'll never hurt you or your baby again. Let go. You've done it. It's over.
Blinded by the silver rush of tears, she couldn't. Her cramped hands would not let go. Kestrel trudged wearily up the eastern slope that led to OtterClan village. All of her strength went into the monotony of placing one foot ahead of the other. Would she ever feel rested again? She glanced at Horsweed, who walked beside her, a grim look on his smooth face. Despite the numbness of her battered body and soul, she wondered what he must think of her now. She was his relative and a murderer. She glanced up.
Clouds had slipped across the sky, creating a majestic, multicolored halo around above Old Man's face. The wind had calmed to a gentle breeze. Horseweed kept glancing sideways at the pack she carried cradled in her arms. The dead baby was so light, as though perhaps not lying on the bed of sage inside at all. But she could feel the boy there. Since she'd picked up the pack, a strange glow of warmth and contentment had been radiating through the soft leather. It grew stronger with each moment that passed. She'd never planned on being reunited with this tiny child that she'd given birth to, but gladness swelled her heart. Kestrel clutched the dead baby closer when she passed the place where Tannin had been killed. Tannin's body was gone, but sadness still pervaded the area, clinging to the black-crimson stain of his blood, as if his spirit lingered, trying to figure out what had happened. How could he have been murdered by his own brother?
Poor Tannin.
My grandfather will have taken him into camp so the women can prepare him for burial tomorrow.
I'm grateful, but I'll prepare him. He was my brother-in-law. He was very good to me, Horseweed, even at the last. Then I'll send word to his wife, calling Crane. She'll be worried until she knows her husband's fate for certain.
I understand.
They crested the hill and walked across the plaza toward the fire. Oxbalm, Sumac, Dizzy Seal, and Harrier sat around the blaze, sipping tea from their wooden cups. Harrier had his back to her. His red shirt glimmered orange in the light of the flames. Several others stood close by, but Kestrel didn't recognize them. She frantically looked for Sunchaser. The travoy she and Horseweed had made stood on end against the far lodge. Sunchaser lay nowhere in sight, not within range of the dancing flames. A thread of terror stitched her chest as her mind accosted her with questions too frightening to be borne. And where was Cloud Girl? The woman who had been feeding her earlier had vanished. Kestrel's feet suddenly felt as heavy as granite.
I'm sure Sunchaser's all right, Kestrel. My grandmother would have finished cleaning and binding his wounds. Then she would have him carried inside and covered with a big pile of hides to keep him warm. You'll see. Sunchaser will be in the far lodge, the one closest to the fire. It's my grandmother's. She would have wanted him to be near so she could keep an eye on him throughout the night. It's just her way.
Kestrel reached out and gently squeezed his forearm. His muscles bunched beneath her touch.
Thank you, Horseweed. You've helped me more tonight than I can tell you. You were very brave to come into the forest after me, especially when you knew about Lambkill's madness. I'll never be able to repay you for your kindness.
I wasn't being brave, Kestrel. You're my cousin or something, and Sunchaser asked me to find you. I had to. Not that you needed my help.
If you hadn't found me, Horseweed, I'd still be sitting in the forest.
She blinked solemnly. Lambkill's body might be dead, but part of her still believed that he might rise up and come after her again. Cycles would pass before she would be able to sleep through a whole night without waking in terror because she imagined his voice or his stealthy footsteps, or just because she sensed him standing over her. When Sumac saw them coming, she rose and pulled the hide more securely over her bent, elderly shoulders. Worry made her face resemble a dried berry. Her gray hair gleamed in the amber glow of the fire. Oxbalm followed her gaze and stood as well.
Don't worry about Harrier. Let me handle him and his brothers. It would be best if you didn't say a word to them. They've already made up their minds about you. Nothing you can say will change that.
Thank you, Horseweed. Again.
Find Sunchaser. Stay close to him. Even unconscious, his holiness protects you far better than any of my darts can.
I'll find him.
Harrier turned and saw Kestrel.
Look! She's alive! She's mine now, Oxbalm! Give her to me!
Sumac raised a fist and slashed the air with it.
Hold your tongue, boy. This is no longer your affair, since we've decided to adopt her into our clan. Unless you really do want a war.
Sumac shot a hard glance at Harrier.
But then your brother wouldn't have threatened to murder her in order to keep her quiet after you raped her if you really wanted a war, would he?
You're taking her word!
Sumac hobbled around the fire and met them halfway across the plaza. She hugged Horseweed and gave him one of those proud nods that caused red to flush his young cheeks.
Oh, I knew you'd find her, grandson. Now, please, go to stand beside your grandfather. He might need your support.
Yes, grandmother.
Horseweed trotted toward the fire where Oxbalm stood. Sumac and Kestrel stared into each other's eyes, probing the depths of each other's soul.
Oxbalm?
My wife has spoken. You heard her, didn't you, Harrier?
It won't be easy. Harrier and his brothers have put in a claim on you. They want to take you back to their village to be punished for Buffalo Bird's murder. But you're welcome here, Kestrel. We'll do our best to keep you safe, if you decide to stay.
Iceplant was right. He told me you were good people. But I need to talk with Sunchaser about it, to find out his plans. Where is he?
Sumac peered intently at the pack in Kestrel's arms, then led her to the entry of the far lodge. They both ducked beneath the door flap, and Kestrel saw Sunchaser lying, just as Horseweed had said, beneath a pile of hides. Helper lay beside him, with his black muzzle on his paws. He wagged his tail when he saw Kestrel. A small fire burned a few hands away, throwing a golden veil over the dreamer's handsome face. Sumac had combed and braided Sunchaser's white hair. The long plait rested over his bandaged shoulder. His eyelids trembled as if in the throes of a powerful dream. Quietly, Kestrel went to kneel beside him. She put her dead son down on the edge of the hides and leaned over to look at Sunchaser's pale face. Sunchaser lay deathly still. To reassure herself, she pushed the hides away to see the rise and fall of his broad chest. Relief flooded her. She didn't want to awaken him, but she had to touch him. Gently, she smoothed her fingers over Sunchaser's sweating forehead. He stirred.
All right.
Yes. Lambkill is dead, and I'm safe. Horseweed found me. He brought me back.
Love you.
Sunchaser's head rolled to the side instantly, and his body went limp. Kestrel put her hand on his chest, feeling his lungs working. She frowned with concern as she pulled the hides back up to shield him from the cold. Her old eyes shining, Sumac knelt beside her.
I think he was trying to stay awake until you returned, to make sure you were unharmed.
Kestrel tenderly squeezed Sunchaser's hand, and all of her strength vanished at once. She sat back on the hard-packed floor and braced her elbows on her drawn-up knees.
I'm so tired, Sumac.
You must get some sleep. But before I find hides for you, could we talk for a while?
Yes. What do you wish to know?
Your little girl.
Is Cloudgirl all right? Did something happen?
Oh, no. She's fine. But I'm worried. I've been watching Harrier and his brothers. They have a mean streak. I'm afraid that if they can't get back at you, well, children are so vulnerable.
I think, Sumac, that the best thing for all of us, including your village, is for me to take my girl and just go away. Last night, I realized for the first time that coming here was wrong. I wish I'd...
Sumac gripped her wrist hard.
No, it wasn't wrong. Now you know you have family. Your children will always have a place to come to. People who love them. Everyone needs to know such things, especially children. Don't be sorry you came here. I'm not.
We'll come back often. I promise. I want Iceplant's daughter to grow up knowing you.
Good.
Sumac released Kestrel's hand, and her gaze shifted to rest on the small pack that lay beside Sunchaser.
That's the dead baby, isn't it? Oh, Lambkill never showed him to us, but I heard people say that's what he carried in that pack.
Yes, that's the dead baby.
Do you want me to take it away? I could take it outside and put it beneath the hide beside Tannen. He's under that big oak tree to the north of the village. Oxbaum posted a guard to keep the predators away.
Kestrel ran a hand through her black hair and shook her head.
No, I want to keep my dead son close to me tonight, so he knows I haven't abandoned him again. I can't explain it, Sumac, but I think he needs me.
Yes, I know what you must be feeling. After my granddaughter died, I sat up with her all night, making sure she was warm. Let me get you those hides. Is there anything else you will need?
No, thank you. Not tonight, but tomorrow I must prepare both Tannen and my son so that they'll be ready for their journey to the land of the dead. Will you help me sing their souls to the Star People?
The whole village will help. But Kestrel, haven't you already sung your son's soul?
A long time ago, but I'm afraid, Sumac. Lambkill claimed that he'd called the baby's soul back and tied it to this body. I have to make absolutely certain that my son isn't trapped here. He deserves the chance to be born again.
Kestrel reached out and placed a hand on Lambkill's pack. She swore she could feel a tiny hand desperately reaching back to her, struggling to touch her. She lifted the pack again and cradled her son against her breasts. The desperation ebbed away.
Sumac, I know I gave my little girl to you, but...
Let me get her and give her back.
Sumac grinned toothlessly as she rose.
Cloud Girl will be happy to see you. She's been whimpering all night.
You are a kind woman. Sumac, I'm not sure, but I've been hearing a voice trying to tell me. Perhaps you will know.
Kestrel reached into the pack and removed a carved ivory doll.
Where did you get it?
From Lambkill's pack. Do you know the doll?
It belongs to my granddaughter, Mountain Lake. My grandson placed the doll on her burial litter after the mammoths killed her. Where did Lambkill... How could he? How could anyone take it from a dead child?
We'll return it to Mountain Lake. In the land of the dead, my son will take it to her. I know he will. He'll explain to them about Lambkill.
Kestrel tenderly reached into the pack and touched the hand of the mummified boy.
Won't you, my son?
Sumac watched her through sober eyes.
Let me go get Cloud Girl for you. Tomorrow we will sing and try to make many things right again. And as soon as Sun Chaser can move, the Otter Clan will leave here, Kestrel. Leave everything behind and return to Mother Ocean's side, where we belong.
She shook her head.
This village has been tainted by witchcraft. It will bring nothing but heartache and sadness to anyone who sets foot in it.
As if in answer, a faint tremor shook the earth. A warning, perhaps, of things to come. The hide walls trembled. Kestrel held her breath until it stopped. Sumac's eyes widened.
I hear you, quaking earth spirits. Just let us leave this place, and you can slide it right into the valley and bury it.
Sumac ducked beneath the door flap, and Kestrel sat quietly, staring at Sunchaser and holding her son. Down the length of the lodge, people slept beneath mounds of hides, their faces reflecting the burnished gleam of the low flames in the fire pit. Carved wooden dolls stuck out between the fingers of sleeping children. As Kestrel looked around, she saw all the things that created a home. But she would be leaving this place very soon, homeless again, and she didn't know where she would go. Kestrel placed her fingers on Sunchaser's white braid, trying not to awaken him this time.
Where will we go, Sunchaser? Where will you be happy?
Catstraw loped painfully down the trail. Ahead, he could see Mother Ocean glimmering just beneath the pastel touch of Dawnchild. The pointed tips of the fir trees lining the shore had just caught the first rays of morning. He'd stopped bleeding, but his powerful muscles screamed in agony, as if hot coals filled the dart and knife injuries. He'd been trotting all night long, and had neither seen nor scented anyone pursuing him. But the wind had come up with such fury that it might have blown away the distinctive smells of humans. To make sure that no one was behind, he kept turning to glance over his shoulder. The shapes of a brightening forest met his searching gaze, but nothing else. Catchstraw trotted out onto the sandy shore and headed north. He couldn't let the villagers see him. The slightest glimpse of a dire wolf would rouse the entire community, and every able-bodied warrior would grab his atlatl to hunt him down. Catchstraw ran into the trees, where he found a game trail. He would find a place to hide, perhaps even the obscure rock shelter where he had first scented Sunchaser and Kestrel, and he would heal himself. The blood of dire wolf carried more power than human blood did. In this muscular body, Catchstraw's wounds would mend faster. Then he would return to OtterClan Village and take up his place as the rightful chief. He would be required to kill Oxbalm, but that would be a small task. The old man was as brittle as a dry stick. Once Catchstraw had become chief, he would intimidate the nearby villages into joining him, and together they would wage war on the desert people, cutting off the trade routes and intercepting any rare goods that came through. The wealth and power gained from that triumph would establish his prestige. As the generations passed, his name would be sung, echoing clear to the land of the dead. Catchstraw halted and pricked his ears. Was that singing? Where could it be coming from? He couldn't understand any of the words. The hair on his back stood straight up in a black ridge. He lifted his long nose and sniffed. His nostrils flared wider when he caught the faint musk of a big animal, a predator. Fear raced through Catchstraw's veins in a stinging wash. He could sense his stalker's approach. Any earthly creature would have been snapping the twigs that lay in clumps along the trail, or frightening the small squirrels and chipmunks that chattered in the trees and brush. This predator moved through the woods like an ethereal wisp of mist. Irrationally, Catchstraw leaped forward and raced up the trail. As he broke out into a crowded copse of newly leafed out aspens, he noticed ravens soaring through the trees at his sides, following him. Two of the birds had soared high into the sky. They circled his location. Finding a game trail that skirted the very edge of the sea cliffs, he stopped again to listen. The ravens swooped down on the rocks to watch him. Catchstraw sniffed for scent again and bent an ear backward. The traitorous wind had shifted, sweeping his own distinct wolf odor down his back trail. He jerked his head around when he glimpsed a huge, amorphous shadow moving silently along the face of the cliff, as if camouflaging itself in the lingering echoes of night. He stared hard. Suddenly, the creature rose on its hind legs and swaggered toward him like a man. Its sheer size struck terror into his heart. But when the subdued dawn gleam reflected from Bear's extended claws, Catchstraw froze, his heart thundering. Catchstraw shot up the trail, his tongue dangling from the side of his muzzle. The flat path wove through the forest until it blended with another trail and led him up a narrow ledge to the crest of a cliff. A dead end. Secreting himself behind an enormous redwood, Catchstraw cautiously slid his muzzle around the curve of the fragrant bark to study his back trail. And there he saw his pursuer loping along. Catchstraw darted through the redwoods like the hunted animal he was, and with every step he took, the singing grew louder. He took another trail, this one looping eastward, its narrow sides bordered by thick brush. Here, the trail doubled back and led him into a series of switchbacks that climbed the steep side of a hill, only to culminate in another dead end. This one was bounded on three sides by sheer rock walls. Catchstraw whirled on his back legs, despite the pain in his wounded haunch. Desperately, he raced back the way he had come, searching, ducking to the right as a gap appeared, and charging frantically forward on the new trail. It too doubled back, taking turns, leading him around in a curious circle.
What's happening to me? Blessed spirits, has my witching lost its potency? How could that be? Who could compete with me? No one has my power!
He sprinted across a meadow and angled down a dew-slick trail lined with overarching dogwoods. This time he knew he'd found the right trail. This one would lead him beyond the reach of that hideous short-faced bear. Victory lay just around this last bend in the... Catchdraw stepped out onto a spit of sand that lanced into the middle of a pool of water. The waterfall tumbled down the black rock in white, churning cascades. Catchdraw's heart ached as he pounded blindly back the way he'd come. He bolted through a hole in the vegetation and found himself on yet another trail. Now he ran with horrified desperation. He had to get out, escape, find Mother Ocean again, and regain his bearings. As he ran over the swell of a hill, he saw a mammoth cow and calf ahead. They stood blocking the trail. When the cow saw him, she lifted her trunk. The vibration tingled through his quivering legs. The cow then lowered her trunk, poised her short tusks, and charged him. Catchdraw darted into the thickest of the underbrush. The mammoth and her calf pursued, thrashing through the shrubbery after him. He evaded them somehow, floundered out, and scrambled up a deer trail. Exhaustion sapped his wolfish muscles, but he staggered onward, hope blunted to the point that he stopped numbly as this trail, too, ended abruptly in a cleft in the rocks. Red sandstone walls towered above him. He turned, backtracking, aware that Mammoth hunted him somewhere back along this trail. He took yet another turn, another trail. Leading where? To another dead end? Or to the center, where Short-Faced Bear and all of his huge fury awaited him? What were all these paths? He'd lived along this shore for his entire life, and he'd never seen this maze. His weak legs failed him. He sat down hard in the middle of the trail and stared wide-eyed at the sky as the truth sank in. He turned in terror, rising again and spreading his legs to prop himself up. Bear lumbered up the trail like a swaying mountain of muscle. Blood stained his square muzzle and streaked his massive chest. When Bear saw Catchstraw, he rose on his hind legs. Gleaming strands of saliva dripped from those teeth that could crush a mammoth bone into splinters. Catchstraw attacked, springing for Bear's vulnerable throat. Bear effortlessly smacked Catchstraw to the side. Catchstraw rolled head over tail into a pile of rocks. He scrambled to rise. Bear closed his jaws around Catchstraw's wounded foreleg and shook him, just as he had shaken Sunchaser. Blood welled hotly in his mouth. Abruptly, Bear spit Catchstraw out and paused to peer down at him. Catchstraw blinked through the thickening gray haze.
Oh, no. Sunchaser, I didn't think dreamers could change into animals. I thought only witches.
The bear's eyes widened, and he lifted his bloody muzzle to listen to the herd of mammoths. Catchstraw sagged against the rocks. Through the dense layer of pine duff and earth, he heard Bear moving away at a headlong run. Catchstraw's eyes felt heavy, so heavy that he couldn't keep them open. He didn't know how long he lay there listening to the wind rustling through the grass. But finally, rain clouds pushed across the sky, and the thunder beings plunged down from their black bellies. With their wings glittering, the thunder beings swooped through the trees. The scent of wet earth and pine rose powerfully. Flies were hovering over him, already laying eggs in his torn hide. Darkness closed in around Catchstraw. He fought it, his ruined legs pawing the air, trying to run, though he knew the effort was useless. He could smell the mammoths as they quietly came to stand over him. The cow smelled like ferns and grass. The calf still bore the sweetness of milk on its breath. Through the tears in his eyes, Catchstraw saw their blurred images.
Foolish human. Did you think you could use power for your own purposes and never have to pay the price? Either you let power work through you to accomplish its goals, or you die. You're lucky you lived this long. Power always wins in the end.
Boy?
The word sent starlit ripples through the land of the dead. All of the star people blinked and flared, listening. Blackness flooded out around them like waves washing across an endless shore.
Yes, man.
I want to discuss something with you.
What is it?
Tomorrow your mother will sing you back to the stars again. Does that make you happy?
I don't know, man.
But I thought you hated being there in that dead body.
At first, I did. But I used to fear so many things when I lived among the stars. Things I no longer fear. I have learned something, man.
Tell me about it.
I have learned that a soul that truly clothes itself in death is never afraid of anything. And seeing the world through the eyes of death is a vision of heart-rending beauty.
Come, boy. Come back to the land of the dead. You have more to learn. But I think it's time you were born as a living, breathing dreamer. Perhaps you can help your mother and the world after all.
Harrier, the last of his brothers to remain loyal to the task, lay stretched out on his belly, Atlatl and darts clutched in one hand, watching as Kestrel led the way onto the beach. Sunchaser limped beside her, a light pack on his shoulder, and Helper followed, hauling a travois filled with hides. Harrier shook his head. Too much had happened for him to understand all of it, but one single fact clutched at his soul. Kestrel carried his younger brother's Atlatl. Even from here, he could see it swinging at her hip. He'd skulked along the trail taken by the pair, awaiting the opportunity to drive a dart into Kestrel's body. But it had never come. The two stuck to each other like glue boiled from an elk's hoof. Therefore, to kill Kestrel, Harrier had first to kill Sunchaser. For if he didn't, the dreamer would seek revenge. And Harrier, having trouble nerving himself to kill a dreamer, quivered in fear at the thought of a dreamer trying to kill him. They passed below, so close that he could hear their voices.
Will there be fir trees there, Sunchaser?
I don't know. I've never been that far north before. I've heard that there are firs and gigantic redwoods twice the size of the ones we have here. Why, Kestrel? Have you grown to love the firs so much?
Yes. They're very beautiful. And I love their scent when the rain soaks them.
Then I hope there are fir. And many of them.
Sunchaser took Kestrel's hand and held it tightly. She smiled again. Strands of her long hair danced in the sea breeze. Harrier slowly rose to his knees, settling a dart into the hook of his Atlatl, easing his arm back. His arm had extended to full reach now and was balanced, the obsidian point at the end of his dart glinting in the sunlight. Suddenly, there was pressure in his back, followed by a sharp pain.
Don't move. Just open your hand and let your weapons fall.
Who?
Do it.
Harrier turned, staring over his shoulder, squinting into the sun to find Horseweed standing above him, pressing a dart into the small of his back.
Are you going to kill me, boy?
I have to admit, you do tempt me, Harrier. The Otter Clan, as in your own clan, considers a youth to be a man when he's killed a mammoth or a man. I may have killed a mammoth. I could certainly kill you. But earning that distinction isn't worth a war, Harrier.
Then you will be a youth all of your life. Are you a coward?
As soon as he'd said it, Harrier regretted the words. No coward had ever battered a witch like Horseweed had done. The boy was brave.
You may believe that if you wish.
What do you want of me?
Your word that you will leave the coast. Follow your brothers back to your people and never bother Sunchaser, Kestrel, or the Otter Clan again.
And you will take my word?
I will. Despite your actions, I think you are an honorable man.
Harrier looked back at the beach, where a man, a woman, a baby, and a dog followed the curving line of surf and sand northward.
Buffalo Bird was a fool to tell Kestrel the things he did. He was so young. Too eager to gain wealth and status. I understand why she killed him, but I loved my brother. Perhaps Buffalo Bird's foolishness shouldn't continue to guide my life. Yes, Horseweed, you have my word.
Harrier sank down on the grass.
I will leave them
and you alone.
At that, Horseweed nodded and lowered his weapons.
Live long, Harrier. I can already tell that you will be a great and wise leader someday.
North America's Forgotten Past, People of the Sea, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1993 by W. Michael Gear and Kathleen O'Neill Gear. All rights reserved. Published by arrangement with W. Michael Gear and Kathleen O'Neill Gear. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Nanette Savard. With Elizabeth Jernigan as Kestrel, Bradley Smith as Sun Chaser, Michael Glenn as Lambkill, Nick DePinto as Horseweed, and Gregory Gordon, Larissa Gallagher, Patrick Busink, Joseph Thornhill, Daniel Sontag, Scott McCormick, Joe Brack, Kimberly Gilbert, Ren Casey, Gary Tells, Margie Tompros, Terrence Aselford, Richard Rowan, and Barbara Pinellini. Directed by Nanette Savard. Produced by Rick Rowan and Wayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Brian Rogers. Additional original music by Matt Webb. Book adapted for graphic audio by Nathaniel Perry. If you enjoyed North America's Forgotten Past, be sure to look for Rogue Angel, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
In the cellars of the wine god lies a key without a lock.
It's a puzzle box. In order to open it, you have to follow a certain sequence of motions.
And how do you know that you are on the right path?
You don't.
Ah, so the box mirrors life, no?
I suppose it does, but that doesn't help tell me how to get it open.
Doug Morrell's office.
Hi, Doug. It's Anya. I'm helping the French police with an investigation in the catacombs.
What? The catacombs? You're running an investigation in the catacombs and you didn't tell me? I'll send a crew over immediately.
There's nothing here of interest to the show. The authorities stumbled on the skeleton of a man in a Civil War uniform and...
Union or Confederate uniform?
Confederate. But that's really beside the point.
This is good, Anya. Real good. We can turn this into a world-class episode. Just leave it to me.
Doug, we're not doing an episode on this. I just need the letter authenticated.
Who's it from?
Jefferson Davis.
Confederate President Jefferson Davis?
The one and the same.
Anya?
Yes, Doug?
Let me be sure I've got this straight. You discovered a skeleton, dressed in the uniform of a Confederate soldier, carrying a letter from President Davis in the midst of the Paris catacombs, and you don't think there's anything of interest there for the show.
There you'll find the lady, left alone and in distress.
The Creed woman apparently survived the fall from the roof. She needs to be eliminated before she speaks to the police. Get back up there and get rid of her before she becomes more of a nuisance.
How did you get that?
I'd be happy to explain everything, but right now I think it's better if we got out of here, don't you? Run!
To find that which you are seeking, use the key to unlock the chest.
It would seem, Miss Creed, that you are better prepared to find the treasure than your colleague. I think it would be much better if you did the dirty work, found the treasure, and then just turned it over to me.
Like hell I will.
Kill one of them. I don't care which one.
Wait! Just wait a moment. I'm sure we can work this out.
Work this out? What is there to work out? You'll either find the treasure for me or I'll shoot your friends. It's pretty simple.
Fine. I'll do it.
See? That wasn't so difficult now, was it? What are you waiting for? I told you to kill one of them.
You son of a bitch!
Anya!
Rogue Angel number 33, Cradle of Solitude.
Available now in graphic audio.
Mr. Cotton.
Oh, it's a bullseye. They changed my name to Target. You call me Target.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Cotton Pickens.
Holy cats, that blonde walked in. And I plumb stopped whatever I was doing right then and there. And I went weak at the knees.
Here's what you're gonna do. You're gonna write me a deed that says that Armand Argo or his heirs owns the Fat Tuesday. Then you're gonna write the same thing for every other claim that Scruples took over.
He'd kill me!
Then get out of town or start writing now. Because if you don't, you won't have any fingers left. And that's just the beginning of the parts you'll lose.
How you doing, big fella?
Why are you here?
To see you, Cotton. I couldn't get you out of my head.
People must learn to abide by their agreements. Poor dear decided not to fulfill her obligations. Just like you.
So what? I quit you. You son of a...
Get off, Arnold.
I'll kill myself if you're too chicken.
Well, it ain't a matter of chicken. It's getting it right. You can't go making mistakes in the killing business.
Well, I wouldn't mind a mistake or two if I get to keep my gold mine.
That's the last time you pull one on me!
There's something you should know. Billy Blue was dragged into the alley behind the mint and killed. There's not much we can do against an army of killers, except lay low for the moment.
He offered me a deal. My life if I snitch on you, death if I don't, torture and death if I tell you about it. Whoa, whoa.
Cotton Pickens, Book 2, Six Ways from Sunday.
Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.